Well, if we played Simon Mitten-Connell's club songs in full tonight, that just might be the end of the interview, because Minter was well-travelled in his time in the top league, the top flight of football, but always a great spearhead of full forward, beautiful set shot at goal, and great value for team and for supporters. He joins us now with Geoffrey Potter. G'day, Minter.
Morning, how are you, brother?
Good, mate. Good to catch up. Good to speak to you again.
You know, it's great to catch up with you two guys. It's an absolute pleasure.
Now, the last time we spoke, you were involved with... Now, I'm not sure whether it was Duta, but certainly had an involvement with young Indigenous footballers in a city, Melbourne. And where's that journey taken you?
I'm the CEO of the Fitzroy Stars Football Club and Netball Club, soon to become a foundation, which is primarily Indigenous men and women and children, but not exclusively so. But we're out at Thornbury, just on St George's Road there on the in the Northern Footy League. So we've got Jason Mifsud coaching us and quite a few AFL players playing within the side as well.
Geoff Polder, Simon, how are you?
Good, Geoff. North Hobart, man.
North Hobart, yes. And it's great. I remember I saw you play, I don't know how old you were, 1987, centre-half back for North Hobart. It was the best Tasmanian club team I've ever seen, I reckon. I mean, Bradley Plain, Darren Davies. There was half a dozen guys that played league footy in that team.
Yeah, Goose Noble and Ed McLean. And, yeah, no, it was a...
McLean, that's right. Excited. And you played centre-half back, I think, that day, and I said, you reminded me of Stephen Silvani. You had, the long sleeves and you had the same sort of action, so... That was a big rap to put on you, big pressure to put on you early, wasn't it?
I was, and I ended up. I think I heard the lead in, and I can actually say he gave me my nickname as well.
Right.
So, when back in those days, it was quite ceremonial to walk into the Carlton Footy Club, as you could expect.
Yeah.
The likes of Buckley, Rhys James, Johnson, Kernahan's, Harms, and. I could keep going on and on and on when I walked in there, and I walked in. I was pretty nervous to see the boys for the first time, and Steve Silvani just yelled out, "Have a look at the loaf of bread on that." And the boys they loved it. I went purple, and it's been the loaf ever since, and to the point that Mum and Dad are even Mr. and Mrs. Loaf, so it's stuck.
Your dad was a pretty handy player, wasn't he, and your uncle Michael... in Tasmania.
Well, they tell me so, yeah.
Yeah. And did they play at, they played at Melbourne or at Paran or in the VFA?
Dad came across and just played at Melbourne, but Mike came across and had a go at Fitzroy and then ended up at Paran. But Mike played on Baldock in the state final when he was at North Hobart.
69,
That's it. And Dad was a state ruckman when he was only 16 when Baldock was coaching, because he played under Doc at La Trobe.
Your dad played in the TFL as well at one stage, didn't he? Was that North Hobart or New Norfolk?
New Norfolk.
Right, yeah.
So he actually went to New Norfolk when Peter left to go to Hawthorn and took his jumper and his sister as well. So that's how all that worked out.
That's good.
So how was it that you came to play at Carlton? You've related, obviously, is it through your mum's side, the Hudsons?
Yeah, mum's Peter's sister. I was in the first draft, 86 draft. So that was all a bit of a surprise to all of us, because we, down in Tassie, there was about 40 drafted in that first year. The 80, as it worked out, the 86 grand final, Hawthorn won, and so Carlton got the first pick just ahead of them.
Yep.
I went to Carlton, Paul went to Hawthorn, as it turned out, and but in saying that, Paul had to work his own way and his own journey, and and you know, I didn't know anyone at Carlton, and as it worked out, I couldn't have picked a better place to go to.
And in that first trip down to Carlton, I mean, it took a while for you to break into the seniors. Obviously, a powerful team.
Yeah.
What was it like having to bide your time and probably realising that if you'd gone somewhere else, there were other clubs that would have comfortably found a spot for you, but you're probably at the most powerful club in the league at the time, so not easy to get into the side.
No, we... In 86, I mean, they just sort of grabbed us, particularly down in Tassie, and a lot of us stayed down there for another year because we were only 16. And... in 87 was a great move by me to stay because we got to play in the first statewide league flag. And then to come across in 88, I suppose, see, I tell you what, it pricked my big head pretty quickly because I think I came third in the, you know, the MVP in the, you know, in the William Leach down there. And I came across and was directly put in into the under-19s. So I had these ideas of grandeur of playing, you know, walking in straight into a senior side and being a part of the current footy club. But Robert Wall certainly got rid of that bit of ego, and I found myself in the 19s and then worked my way up and had to do it the old way, I suppose.
And you would have benefited from the club culture, though, even though you had a tough initiation. It would have been a benefit to you overall for in the long term, wouldn't it?
There was no better culture. It was fantastic. You know, the guys that were leaving around that time, probably, you know, the Buckley, Harms, Ilk, you know, Kenny Hunter, they were on their way out and just... that. They just wanted to give as much knowledge and wisdom over to the kids, so I got an opportunity to listen to those absolute legends and champions, and then be a part of the rebuilding, I suppose, with Sticks and Sauce and you know, the Gleesons and Bradleys of the time. So it was really exciting time. It was I was pretty green coming out of Hobart, as you know, Jeff, and the bright lights of Melbourne. I learned a few things in those first couple of years. There's probably nine of us who lived in a boarding house in Pascoe Vale. And we did pretty much was train and study and train again during the day. And then, it was once again start again. So it was a real eye-opener to come from friends down in Tassie, North Hobart, to full-time footy just about, and play with these absolute legends that we only saw on the, what was it called back in those days, Saturday night with Drew Morfitt?
Yeah, the winners.
The winners. Yeah. And that's all we got down there. And to see your absolute, you know, the guys that you idolised and be standing shoulder to shoulder, it was sort of tough to believe in yourself to think that you can play alongside of them. But that happened, and good coaches and things like that, but gee, I got a really good grounding from those guys.
You went to Friends School in Hobart, did you, Simon?
Yes.
That's Max Walker's.
Maxie Walker. Alma, that's right.
Yeah, he was the most famous Friends old scholar, isn't he?
You'd have to ask him, but Errol Flynn might just get him.
I thought he was a Hutchins boy, Errol Flynn.
No, he got kicked out. They try and get in. He got kicked out of Hutchins. He did his time at Friends.
Yeah. He's got a bit on Max Walker, isn't he?
he certainly is the most famous ex-scholar from Friends. But we're just over the road from North Hobart, as you know.
Yeah.
It's pretty easy for me to go to training.
Simon Minton-Connell, our special guest tonight. We can tell you that Blacktown have knocked Central Coast Mariners out of the FFA Cup, so another big A-League scalp gone. Minty, you went within really just a whisker of having one of the most famous league debuts. It's almost a pity that in 1989 you were given a sniff of football, just one game in 1989.
Yeah.
Didn't see much action, spent most of the day on the pine, and it's a pity because otherwise you'd be part of footy folklore. Your next game, your first serious game, was the year after, 1990, round two against Collingwood at Waverley. And can you tell the listeners what your real debut was like?
Well, I kicked it. Yeah, the first one, the horrendous one. Jezza threw me in, and I kicked it on the man of the mark. And I think Sticks kicked it back to me about 20 metres to get me the ball. And that was the end of 89. But that was a bit embarrassing. But, yeah, we played out to Waverley in front of a packed ground again against Collingwood, which was always fantastic. And Dacos was running absolute right up the other end, and I was lucky enough to, I think 7-3. There you go.
Against the premiership,
so lost by a couple of points, but it was amazing to watch Dacos. But I also can remember before the bounce, I knew I was in the big league because Stephen Kernan was a colossus for the club, and there was Monkhurst, Shaw, Kelly, Gaffer, the whole lot of them attacked Sticks at centre-half-four before the bounce, and it was Stacks on, and Banks and Mullane were there as well. I thought, I better fly the flag here, and Monkhurst got me in a headlock, and I'm pretty sure he squeezed my brains out like a pimple at one stage, and I thought, I'm in strife here, and lost. I was just about to pass out, and he let go, thank goodness, but I sheepishly went back to the goal square, but did all right that day. But they were terrific days. And I think back at the tunnel afterwards, I think Mullane and Banksy bought me a beer and welcomed me to the big light after giving me a whack during the day. So
pretty
other great days.
Yeah, it's a great day. Dacos 7 straight up one end, Minton Connell 7-3 up the other end. The week later, you're playing against the Saints, you're off to a good start, and then you get injured. And you wouldn't reappear for another 13 matches. It's hard lines for a young man just about to crack that difficult nut of league football wide open.
Yeah, well, Denny Frawley got me on that one, broke my leg. But right on the siren. And back in those days, Wolsey had let you know that if you're coming off the ground, you better have something busted and busted good. And I thought, oh, no, I'm in strife here. I've really been needing the calf quite badly. The ball wouldn't go away, and I went to jump, and I heard the crack. And I thought, all right, there you go. Yep, she's busted. I got stretched it off, and the siren went, and we had an amazing win against Plugger and Stewie Lowe St Kilda. But that put me out for about 10 or 12 weeks, which was a shame.
Yeah, it is a real shame. You'd still return, and a couple of weeks after you return, a big bag of eight against the Doggies.
Yes.
But injury would play you a bit of Carlton, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I just find I wasn't big enough. I was playing against the big boys, and I was pretty quick, but, I think I kicked eight out there. I shouldn't say I think. I know I kicked eight.
You certainly did.
Particularly terrorised me afterwards. We've become pretty good friends. But, I had a really tight back, and I kept on doing the hammy. And I think I missed 12 weeks again with a hammy. So it took me a while, and Carlton were really... You know, they were patient with me, but I couldn't get a good run at it. And in the end, I just started really finding my feet when the big move happened.
For someone who played on the back line as a kid, you had a terrific method and technique. You could find a goal. You could somehow steer the ball through the goals pretty regularly, more often than most. How did that work?
I think it was Paul and I, Hutto and I. We
practice, yeah.
Yeah, we, out the back of the Granada Tavern, we'd be kicking a 4-litre orange juice container around, or put paper mache in something, and we'd be trying to hit the most impossible, possible targets, and we just didn't have a footy out of the hands, the two of us. We were inseparable, to be honest, and then Andy Lovell was sort of there as well. So we had some pretty good lads, and we were forever trying to do trick shots and, you know, having a crack at doing whatever. And I suppose I watch Peter probably more than most. When he kicked 200 goals when he came back to Glenorchy after his knee and then went back to Hawthorn. But I just used to watch how he positioned himself, and he gave me some terrific tips. I was probably closer to Peter than the way he played than Paul. And so he had a profound...
He crouched down. He used to place the ball on his foot carefully. He was bent, stooped over the ball. It was all sort of very careful the way he kicked the ball, wasn't it?
Oh, it was. It was. And when I was in strife, you know, if I was ever going for a lean patch of, you know, having a kick, Peter would come over. I mean, we had a kick at the Maradon Oval, you know, with the roads going past and people beeping, and he'd do anything to come and try and help. It was pretty handy to have someone like Peter. But,
And Paul, yeah, Paul
I,
was...
I learned a lot. I learned a lot. And Dad used to take me and watch Peter a lot. And as it worked out, Dad was Peter... Dad used to punch the back of his head and belt the living daylights out of him every comeback he had, to be honest. So we'd go to Chigwell Primary and Paul and I'd kick the ball up to those two blokes and watch them belt the living daylights out of each other. And Peter had come across and kicked 10 goals for Hawthorn.
At the end of season 1992, 1991, I should say, you're a Blues player and Minton, Connell and Carlton part company. Or what were the circumstances around you making a really big move? Because not only were you to leave Carlton, you were to leave Melbourne, a town in which you'd certainly enjoyed yourself and become very familiar with Melbourne and started to start a life as a Victorian.
Yeah, that was horrific, to be honest. That whole, you know, I was pretty still immature in the way, you know, I was still bright lights Carlton, really, you know, through and through. David Kernan was my best mate. We were inseparable, Sticks, and, you know, the Kernan family brought me up just about over here. But, that day, we were in Hawaii just coming back, and I pretty much went straight to the club, and I was in contact with my father, and Dad said, look, Sydney are really keen. Buck and I have taken over the Swans, and he really rates you and wants to build a forward line around you. Look, at the time, there were Sticks, Soss was going forward, Dorotich, Peter Satori, there were some big boys, Andy Kavanagh, and we'll sort of jump it on each other a bit. There was pretty big timber down there. And, you know, the opportunities weren't great. I thought about it, but I was through and through Blues. And then they go, look, they're not going to go away. Mike Willis, he's got a helicopter coming in and all this stuff. And I go, well... And they made me an offer for 3 years that was... really crazy to knock back. And, you know, Bucky spoke to me about just what opportunities I was going to get. And I ended up just having a look at it and speaking to my father and to my uncle. And it was the toughest decision I ever made, to be honest. But it was one I loved. I probably got away from a security blanket in those Carlton boys. And had to stand alone, and I got up there to a fledgling club, and the mates I've got from Sydney are probably the ones that I'll have forever. You know, Louis and Scotty Doreen and these types that, you know, I speak to often, and I loved it up there and would still be up there today, and unless it was, you know, for other issues. But they were brilliant up in Sydney, and, you know, although it was tough, you could see what Brass was trying to execute, and yeah, it was terrific. It was a great environment, and they deserved the success later on in the 90s.
We'll get back to the Swans in a moment. It was a great time personally, where Simon Minton-Collin would play some of his best football for the team. It was tough going, but we've just got a couple of SMSs as we were leaving Carlton, reminding us of a famous day at Princes Park against the West Coast Eagles. Carlton, a game that the Blues, you know, are desperate to win, and with almost the last kick of the day, you have, from 40 metres out near the boundary, kicked the winning goal, pandemonium breaks loose. Every boy's childhood dream, kicking the winning goal in the VFL or the AFL, and you did it. What was it like?
Yeah, well, we had no show. West Coast hadn't been beaten at that stage. And, yeah, that was... we had a very good side, and we just couldn't put it together. There was so much turmoil at the club at the time. And I didn't fully understand how big a Carlton was until after that, with the people. It was Glenn Hawker's 30th that night. And I've had better nights myself, but I got introduced to prime ministers, to Jack Elliott had me meeting everyone, to a couple of those very colourful Carlton crew. I think he's in Lygon Street or something like that. I think they come from to the biggest crooks in the world, to the most. I covered the whole spectrum just about in about 3 or 4 hours, and it was amazing the importance that Carlton had to so many people. And I ran into someone probably 20 years later, and he came flying up to me. He goes, you know, my father, never hugged me. And he said, he's passed away now. He goes, but it's a memory I'll never forget. He goes, you kicked that goal, and he turned around to me and hugged me and didn't let go for about 10 minutes. He goes, I'll never forget it because you kicked a goal. So I said, well, that's terrific.
You mentioned before about Scott Doreen. There are a few Tasmanian boys up in Sydney. I don't know if they're all there about your time, but there was a few went through the system up there in that period, didn't they?
And I think there were some characters amongst them, Jeff, I can tell you. Krezza.
Krezza, yeah.
Yeah, Krezza, Scotty, Andrew Dunkley. We had some good Tasmanians up there. There was some pretty friendly fire with the New South Welshmen, but, you know, there was they're guys that I'll, you know, forever be friends for, you know, for the rest of my life.
And it was an interesting time at Sydney, Simon, because whilst the 3 years you were there yielded three wooden spoons for Sydney, as you said, the seeds were being sown, you played some of your best football. You topped the goal-kicking all 3 years for the club, including 93, where you only played 10 games. In fact, in 93, a brilliant effort against top-of-the-table Essendon when you kicked 8 goals. So you personally had played some wonderful football up there.
Yeah, I was a bit... a little bit of the nomads were thrown together a little bit at that time, and, you know, some guys, because of the big deals that were done, we had some guys from Fitzroy, like Stroops and Darren Kapler, and you know, Scotty Waters come over from WA, and then Peter Philandias, and we were sort of thrown together, and I suppose that I was a spearhead, and that was, I suppose, the best time. You know, I was coming into the mid to low 20s, and was probably the fittest I've ever been. And so I hurt my knee there once, but other than that, it was, well, I fractured a skull as well, but I bounced back from that pretty quickly. But the knee hurt me in that 10 games in that year. But yeah, I got pretty close to the top of the goal kicking the final year, but it was a little bit hard work, but I enjoyed it. I loved the SCG. I had Caps and Basie. Every time Darren Kaplan and Basie, I took off like 100 miles an hour because I knew it would hit me, glace out. But then you had the likes of Paul Kelly and Barry Mitchell, you knew that, and Jack Daniels, you knew that helicopters were coming flying at you and they were kicking it at you. But
how did you feel leading to Jack Daniels?
Nervous. But it's amazing. I started the reason a little bit better than my full back because I used to dip really quickly at the end. So I'd be taking a lot of chest marks on while falling forward. Yeah, the fullbacks didn't quite read Jack very well at all, but it became a pretty good weapon for me.
We've got to take a break, Simon. When we come back, we travel with you to the Hawks, and you almost, gee, after three consecutive wooden spoons at Sydney, you almost bring it to Hawthorn, and they finish second last, but then things change and finals football becomes part of the latter part of your career. We'll talk about that with Hawthorn and the Doggies. And speaking of Hawks and dogs and other creatures, I'll ask what role you might have played, if any, with a certain famous pig at the SCG. Well, it could have been the Hawthorn song, the Sydney song, but we'll go with Minter's last club, the Bulldog song. Simon Minton-Connell, our special guest tonight. And after 3 years at the Swans, it's back to Melbourne and Hawthorn, a club with a strong family connection. Simon, did that play any role in you becoming a Hawk?
Everything, Finey. Yeah, that was... I had to come back for personal reasons back to Melbourne. Because, yeah, which was tough because I loved it in Sydney. But that mate was had to happen, and you know, I suppose I was interviewed by six or seven of the clubs, and in the end, finally the heart ruled the roost there, because it was crazy looking back in retrospect to make a move. But Peter Knights was pretty keen to have a two-pronged attack. The game was changing a fair bit, but to try and get a kick along someone like Dunstall was tough. But Peter was a CEO at the time. And Nan and Pop were putting a fair bit of pressure on as well for Paul and I to play together so they could watch the one game on the weekend. But, and Mum and Dad were pretty keen to have some social events with Peter and Steph. So, yeah, and I barracked for Hawthorn. Of course, right through my junior days, and it was a little bit of a fairy tale to get there. But from a footy point of view, gee, it wasn't the smartest, and it probably didn't work out.
But on July the 2nd, 1995, Nan and Pop got their result because the Hawks were away at Princes Park to Fitzroy. And that was the day the family got it right, because you kicked 8-3.
Yeah.
And Hutto kicked 5-6.
Yeah.
13-9 between cousins. I don't know whether it's ever been done before. We'd have to ask the statisticians that. But that was a fun afternoon.
Yeah, that was good. Possibly was a disappointment to the fans of Hawthorn. Not possibly, I know I was. And to be able to show that I could play a bit was all right. But Dunster was injured that day, and he got really uninjured very quickly. He was back the week after.
Paul was... you mentioned people able to kick the footy. Paul Hudson was probably the most reliable. From the right-hand side of the ground in that corner there, about 40 metres out, the most difficult kick... And he was probably as good as anyone from that spot. I mean, I mentioned other... You talk about Hawthorn. I mean, Ken Judge and Jarman and Buccaneer and a few of those folks. Yeah. But I would have thought if you had someone kicking for your life from 45 metres out on the boundary line on the right-hand side, I reckon Paul Hudson would be as close as anyone, wouldn't he?
Absolutely. And, you know, one of the best things I think I've learnt from Hawthorn is when I got there, they used to do a kicking... goal kicking pomp after every Thursday night training.
Oh, yeah.
There'd be 4,000 or 5,000 people there. Mm. And Dunster always had Hutto, and Jars was the other one, and he grabbed me.
Mm.
And there was some pressure on with those people around the goals. And I think Jars and I got them the first time, and we were high-fiving. I don't think they've been beaten, if at all. And so I got the spruik fairly feverishly with Paul and didn't let him forget about that. But that was some of the most serious pressure of all time. And to have Dunstall giving you lip on the mark, I tell you, he was good at it. So you learn how to block it out very, very quickly.
From Hawthorn to the Western Bulldogs, and you arrive at the Doggies again, this time like at Carlton, and the Doggies are in top of the table form. You're there in 97, and you played most of the home and away games, but come the finals, you're not part of the lineup. Can you explain why or how it was that the man invested with the number one Guernsey wasn't part of that famous 97 campaign?
It was a bit daunting, really, because they were at the bottom of the ladder in 96, and it looked like they were going to fall over. But, when we were doing the pre-season, I can remember doing the 400-metre hill sprints up the zoo there, and Smorgo and Rick Kennedy come flying up in their Bentley or something and said, the Footscray Football Club is no longer in existence. We're becoming the Western Bulldogs. Mm. And... Geez, I've just signed with these blokes. They're going under the... They look like they're going to fall off the cliff. And with that, I couldn't believe the talent those blokes had. And to finish last, it defied rationale with that, because the talent was extraordinary. But I started well, and then unfortunately the hamstring started again towards the latter part of the year, and I was coming back to the finals. I won the goal kicking that year on the front half of the year, but it fell apart in the back half. But I was talking to Plough. I think he was pretty keen to get me back in, so I was a bit of a shot for the granny, which is a real disappointment. But I've never seen so many devastated blokes after that Adelaide game. I was actually on the radio doing a bit of commentary and was very pleased at half-time. And to have to go down to those rooms after that game against Adelaide was probably akin to a funeral.
In 98, you kicked five goals in the final round. Was that just about your last game of league footy?
In the qualifying final against West Coast.
Oh, right, yes.
That's right, yeah.
The final round. I meant the final, your final game.
That was we beat West Coast in the finals, and then we came up against Adelaide again, and we got belted. They had us covered at that stage after 97, and that was my last game. The following week, I got an opportunity to finish it off in the reserves and played in a premiership, led the side in that game. So my last three games were at the MCG, which was nice. And then the game after that was with Ballin at the Peanut Farm down at the Luna Park. So, Dorothy was out of Kansas then. I can tell you, when the captain said to me, we're going towards the Mad Mouse, I thought, well, this isn't the MCG, that's for sure.
Luna Park.
And so one last one, Minter. We've got mutual friends, and our mutual friends can be a bit mischievous. 1993, one of the most extraordinary but well-remembered moments in football history. There's a pig on the SCG. There's a pig at full forward. I think Sandy even named it as a white land race. Did you have any part in helping those boys get that pig into the ground?
I think you know this answer, don't you, Finey?
I think I do, but I'm not. It's not for me to break allegiances or confidences.
Oh, yeah, terrific fellow. Well done. I had a little bit to do with it. I was up the other end on Danny Frawley, and he didn't talk at all to anyone, but he said, what idiot would do that? He goes, you know how hard it is to catch a piglet. He goes, we're going to be here for another hour doing that. And I had tears flowing. A few of us knew about it because I think I'm not breaking any confidence or anything, but boss has been on the TV left, right and centre spruiking his
his version, and he was the mastermind behind it. But yeah, I sort of knew where you could buy a pitch up in Blacktown, and I sort of knew that there was a couple of injured guys that might be able to help get it in. But yeah, there was three or four of us who knew what was going on, and it was become folklore, hasn't it? But
certainly it was folklore. You know, I played a role myself, because some years earlier, I mean, Boffa was hatching this plan for a long, long time. And my 21st, I took a few mates to South Australia for a gambling weekend, and Boffa and Bomber and a few of his mates met us there. And Bomber, Boffa at my 21st, the first night we went to the casino, he said, I've got two mice in my pocket. I'm going to let them go on the roulette wheel. And you know what? Just like that pig at the SCG, one of the mice hit the roulette wheel and landed four tables away. It just went ping. But the other one, just like that pig at the SCG that behaved almost to script, this mouse at the casino that Boffa let go on the wheel started doing the sort of the anti-clockwise exercise run. Women were screaming, security guards laughing their heads off. And afterwards, Boffa said, you know what? That was magnificent. I'm going to let a pig off at the SCG. But not the SCG. He said, I'm going to let a pig out at the footy. And it took him about a decade, but he did it. So
He did. I certainly did not have anything to do with poker, though. I'll make that very clear.
Yeah, that's right. How about the backtrack there? He claimed it was an homage. Yeah. I don't think Plugger took it
Plugger's mellowed now, isn't he?
Yeah. Hey, Minter, we've run out of time, but it's been absolutely ripping to catch up with you.
Simon.
Great memories.
Yes, it is.
Good on you, Minter.
Thanks, guys.
See you, mate. I don't know him as Loaf. I know him as Minter. I know him as a cracking bloke, brilliant bloke, and great fun.